of the Cooligans. This is officially our 1,000th episode.
How insane is that?
How did this happen?
Who allowed this to happen for this long?
1,000.
That's who. Wow, this is incredible. From our kitchens, 1,000 episodes. Did you think you would do 1,000 episodes of this show?
I don't think I'd do 1,000 of anything, right?
Damn.
Like, it's just you would imagine, you know, everything falls apart, you know? Like, that's buddy, just the nature of life.
That's how life is. But 1,000, just over a decade, 11 years as of this month,
yeah,
of doing the Cooligans. Shouts to everybody who's been with us the entire time. If you're a day one listener, what are you doing? What are you doing with your life?
You have heard a voice way too much.
Yeah, bro.
but no, man, it's cool to think about the amount of people whose ears we've been inside of. You know what I mean?
what a comfortable way to put that. And by the way, what a way to celebrate 1,000 episodes, because mm-hmm. we have a huge surprise. We're going to be doing an all cast.
Yes.
MLS.
I mean, it's not,
and Campeones
Cup. It's not as much of a surprise because they did put out a press release about
it. A huge surprise as opposed to, like, in the sense of, like, a big gift.
Yes. I mean, it's gonna be 1 week from tonight. We are going to be watching, obviously, the Campeones Cup, Cruz Azul, and Inter Miami. But you can watch.
This is an all cast. We're going to be showing you. We could go to the ref cam for the whole game if we want, bro.
Imagine that. That would be quite a way to
Vertigo? Whatever. But check
people
it out.
Just so vomiting into their phones.
It's on Wednesday, September 16th, starting at 7:55 p.m. Eastern Time. And the only way to watch it is on yahoosports.com or the Yahoo Sports app.
Yes.
But this is Cruz Azul versus Inter Miami. I think you know some of the players on Inter Miami, folks.
Sure. This is going to be a really cool opportunity. Apple has never done something like this before.
And they may never do it again because they are trusting us.
So they're realizing, like, oh my goodness, I think we've made a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
3 minutes.
Should we have listened to any one of their other 999 episodes?
Nobody's on top of this, and that's on them. But we're really excited about it. So make sure you join us on the 16th, September 16th for Campeones Cup, and watch the game with us. Well, just like the Manning cast, we're going to be showing the game. We're going to have access to the replays, to the ref cam, and we can bring that up ourselves, which is
like
super cool.
We can do whatever we want, bro. In fact, what we really want is some of our day ones. We want some of our OG Cooligans fans. So 1,000 episodes. Thank you so much for riding with us this entire time. Now you got to join yahoosports.com or the Yahoo Sports app so you can watch our all cast, because there's other opportunities to do more of these, but we really want you guys there. We want our OGs there.
Exactly. So make sure you tune in. All right, everybody. But let's get today started. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Okay, just with a 1,000th energy. You know what I mean?
We've been here. I'm too old for this type of, you know?
Okay. You see the grays in my beard?
Okay, some of us actually have that. You just don't even have a beard. That's how you avoid that.
Okay, my long, wispy beard. Yeah. Why can't I do the motion,
though? It doesn't come up on camera, but he's got three long hairs.
Okay, but Champions League happened. That we're getting started with Champions League. But
yes.
We have already two match days, so there's one more tomorrow. But let's get started right there.
Why don't we start with Arsenal? Because it was a lot, obviously, look, it was a big win, 3 points against one of their three biggest competitors, right? If you look at their all the matches that they have coming up, there's three that would immediately point to and say, if you win those, the rest of them, you should probably win. If you win these three big ones, you're probably going to do well. You've got your Bayern, you got your Real Madrid, and probably the next one, some would say Dortmund. I would actually say Napoli, because Napoli are very good defensively. And what you're seeing here is a team that had a lot of opportunities in Arsenal. With a XG of 4.05. They knocked on the door quite a bit. In fact, the door was even open. No need to knock. And yet they could not score. But they did. I mean, they did. Martin Odegaard obviously scored a screamer of a goal. But yeah, man, it's the missed chances. And it kind of leads to the conversation that I want to have about this Arsenal game. As an Arsenal fan, it leaves me with a little bit of worry that maybe enough wasn't done to secure themselves a Champions League level player. That almost feels like not a guarantee, because there are no guarantees, but it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable that we really are going after Champions League this season.
Yeah, and this transfer window, which is obviously was disappointing for a lot of Arsenal fans. Like, as a non-Arsenal fan, part of me is also like, how come nobody wants to play for y'all? How come nobody wants to do business with y'all?
Who said nobody wants to do play for us? Because we got Collins, though. We got Bruno Guimaraes.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah, but
the Mbappes of the world.
The Vinnies. Well, okay.
Why are they not in those kind of conversations? Why seemingly, like, somebody's like City can convince a player to go over there versus an Arsenal.
Is it 15 reasons why City?
Is it simply wages?
No, I don't think it's wages. Even though there is a Soccernomics talks about the direct correlation between how much you play with players versus and how much you win. There's a major overlap there. I actually think it's a bit of frustration with the idea that Arsenal isn't a place to flourish offensively. If you are an attacking player, may be worried that this club is just too defensive. Your stats aren't going to look good. You're not going to get the highlights. The team is going to be too defensive. And also, they stack the attacking third with players. So you're seeing Calafiori getting highlights. Right. You're like, if I'm a striker, why am I going to go there? You got all these people. Who was it that was it Ian Wright? Who was it? It was like, stop overlapping and cutting into my space. Send me to cross.
Right.
Or was it Ashley Cole?
Ashley Cole, I think, was saying that.
Yeah. No, it was Andy Cole said that when he was on the show. He was like,
was it Joe Cole? Ashley,
we had
Andy?
Too many Coles on the show. but he was like, why are you cutting in, bro? You in my space. Let me score.
I think
if you're an attacking player, maybe that weighs on you and you think, nah. I don't want to go there and do all the hard work defensively and not get all the highlights.
I don't want to be a part of this group project. I want a little bit of shine for myself.
Not doing too much work. It's like for when I got the writing packet for John Oliver, they said you need to have like 8 sources. I'm not doing this. This is homework. This isn't a writing packet. It's the same thing. Like, it feels like maybe Arsenal isn't the place I can flourish and my stats can't go up. Like, if you go to PSG, you're definitely going to get them. You're going to get goals.
Sure. That's the missed chances. When you look at an XG of over 4, and we were watching the game, we were doing a watch along, the moments of just like clear the Madueke chance, the
Madueke hurts Incapié. Way more than Incapié, that's a defender. I can't ask the ball's bouncing.
You're basically in the net, bro.
It's a volley,
and then
it's a volley and a center back who's playing left back.
And
the Madueke one is the toughest one.
I thought the Sako one was the toughest one. That was
Marino was a great save.
That was a great save. He did his job.
Yeah.
As far as like getting it like on target. Hitting it over the net when you're like 8 yards out is kind of ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, Incapié was even closer. So those are the moments where you think like, look, it's not to say Arsenal had a fantastic Champions League season. They got to the final. They did it in their own way. You know, obviously.
Were they undefeated the entire way through? Yeah, because technically they lost in penalties, right?
Did they lose any game? I think they drew some of the knockout game, like any individual matches.
But they were undefeated.
But I think they were undefeated, effectively. Yeah. But they obviously won through the league phase. And so it's not. Look, they got it done. But when you think of the game in the final against PSG, like the difference realistically there was just that little bit of quality. And PSG, we all know that their strategy is basically lock up Ligue 1 as soon as possible, rest your players.
Even start your starters.
They limit their minutes in your domestic league and focus on Champions League. So that is what whoever is going to get far in the Champions has to kind of compete with. They're two different. You know, it's its own competition, and everybody has their own strategy.
Are at a disadvantage if you're a Premier League club, because week in, week out, you face very tough competition of clubs with a lot of money. Then PSG.
And by the time they got to the final, they looked tired. They just like didn't look like a team.
Again, took them to penalties. They literally got as far as you could possibly get without winning. So
good. Okay. Well,
at the end of the day, like, oh, it's this quality, this and that. I honestly don't.
But from the final, right? The Champions League final to the first game in match day one, this is where you get your goal. Like, this should be the easier one you're fresher.
Not Napoli. Napoli is a tough competition. When we go up against some of them other boys, that's when the stats are going to get padded.
Gotcha.
All right, what's the second biggest takeaway?
Next up, Liverpool against Atletico Madrid. Liverpool wins 2-1. Alexis McAllister gets the game winner.
Andoni gets his first win, too, as a manager.
In Champions League. Good for him.
We played for New York City FC.
But the concern here, or at least my initial thoughts, are with Diego Simeone. Like, this is, I mean, I don't know if it's inappropriate to start asking the question, but like, do we want to try something different? I mean, I don't know what are the ambitions for Atletico Madrid? Like, push out Real Madrid or compete with Real Madrid? Are they trying to? No, it's not like they don't win titles. They have real opportunities. Yeah, but
they're the third in the big three of La Liga, so they're like in a good spot, right? They're not Real Madrid and they're not Barcelona. They don't have the cachet of the Clásico.
But a story they don't club, have all that, yeah.
But they're massive. They're an absolutely massive club, and they are perpetual Champions League club, especially under Diego Simeone. The question becomes, has Diego Simeone overstayed his welcome? And the other question that should be asked is the board doing a disservice by not taking chances on changing the type of tactics and the type of manager they have? Liverpool, the fact that they played against Liverpool is a good example of a club that has made slightly more cutthroat decisions with their managers after Jurgen Klopp left. Would Jurgen Klopp still be there if he was there? Sure, but it hasn't been 24 years. Mm-hmm. And bringing in someone like Andoni Iraola is going after someone who clearly has a track record of punching above his weight.
A fresher vision. A different set of eyes.
Advancing the game a little bit. Right. And are you missing out on that? And it's not so much that Diego Simeone is defensive and, you know, in the past he's been sort of route one, if you will. It's not so much the tactics. It's that, bro, at some point you just want fresh ideas. 24 years, you've seen it. He will go down in history as a legend of this club, as a manager, without a shadow of a doubt. Is it time to move on? Part of me believes if you want to switch up what you have, sometimes the message gets old, and what you have to do is you have to get a whole new squad of players in there just to refresh it.
Look,
maybe it's a new manager.
He is deeply respected, and I think even amongst the players as well. I think the Julian Alvarez situation with, like, you know,
You say Julian and not Julian.
Whatever, man. You say this all the time.
But he wants to be called Julian. That's why I'm surprised.
Sure, I'm just...
We're Latino, if you
I'm
guys haven't
I'm just talking,
noticed.
Yeah. Fine.
I'm shocked.
Julian Alvarez.
There you go.
If the situation with him and the sort of... drama around, like, the transfer, and he wanted to go and they don't want him to go to Barcelona.
I side with Atleti in that. You can't just be out here speaking out loud about how you want to be with somebody else. That's crazy. If I have the choice of not letting you go to that team, I'm not going to let you go to that team now. You want to be petty? I'm going to be petty.
But wait, you think Alvarez overstepped by having a preference of what club the club is getting a lot of money for the transfer. It's not rude for him to want to go to a specific club.
It certainly is if they're being vocal about it, if they're being public about it. It's like, bro, have some respect, put some record. That makes me look like I'm a chump now. I have to sell to Barca. No, I'm not. I'll stand on business even if I lose money.
Sure.
It's ridiculous.
Because you're talking about tens of millions of dollars. You're going to stand on business? That's ridiculous.
100%, because it's not like someone else isn't going to pay that.
It's like your money. You're the coach. You're the owner. You're going to just lose.
It's the owner, but it's not the coach. The coach isn't the only one making that decision. That is the decision the entire board has come towards. They're not going to sell to Barcelona. Also, you're selling to a you're going to have to face them at least twice a season without the additional competition. Cup competitions. I'm not selling you to a team in my league.
The risk is that the player is disgruntled and doesn't want to play and that's an easy thing to do. You bench him and now you lose the advantage of having that player or the money that you could have gotten in to bring in another player to replace him.
Here's the truth. Does the player risk anything by not playing or not playing well if he's played? Yeah, I think he risks the potential move to the club he wants, especially if he doesn't look good out there, if he's pouting, if he acts like a bad teammate. So I wouldn't say bench him, play him. Play him as much as you want. That boy is going to try his hardest to score. He's going to continue to play well because he wants to keep that door open to his favorite club. If a similar offer comes from another club, I'm going to move him there. And then you try to get to Barcelona.
It's quite the risk. I mean, I wouldn't. That's not wouldn't be my approach. I understand why Atleti did not want to sell to Barcelona. And there's business related reason, tampering. They felt disrespected. Like I understand.
I would never.
I understand the. I would never.
I would like, never. You. I don't care if you offer me doubles.
There's a dollar amount that would make it happen.
300 million. I still would say no because you still have to face this guy.
You sound ridiculous, bro.
Really? What did Barca do with the 200 plus million that they got for Neymar? It doesn't completely change your club.
I'm not saying that either, but there's a dollar amount.
Yeah, that
you get rid of the headache that the player is giving.
Atleti already has money. They're not gaining a massive amount.
A tweet from Atletico Universe says, the journalist asked Koke a question about Julian Alvarez. Koke's response, you need to leave the kid alone. We're very tired of it. Let him enjoy himself and play. All of you need to give him a bit of peace because you've been very tiresome all summer. Right there. Damn. So they're
getting on
it.
My nerves and I ain't even involved.
But this also tells me, bro, this kid is good. We can't be, I don't want to talk about this, but we're not trying to. It doesn't sound like he's mad.
No. Also, Alvarez. Leave him alone is like, hey guys, we really need him to score.
We don't really have a lot of attacking options here.
Let us know what you think because I personally, I would not sell please. Him. I'd never sell
please
him
comment
to,
on how stupid Alexis is, bro. Yeah. To have this
to your main competition, you're gonna send your best player. Nah,
okay,
send him to Saudi tomorrow.
Last thing I think is Real Madrid. They won their game against Inter Milan. Inter Milan, made too many mistakes that cost them a result here. But this new look of Real Madrid, and especially at both fullback positions, I think this is a huge upgrade, definitely going forward with Cucurella, and still a very good defender. But then Denzel Dumfries on the right, and then Trent Alexander-Arnold in the midfield, where everybody kind of always said that is where he should be.
Yeah, well, not really. I never said that because I think him being the overload player is the magic that you see in Trent Alexander-Arnold. Starting him as a midfielder gives there's somebody already ready to cover you.
I think for Real Madrid and in La Liga, I think it's
and that was that. That's the caveat I'm going to make is like you're Real Madrid though, so sure. You could put Trent Alexander-Arnold as a striker and you're going to do fine. But I think the power that comes with the defensive prowess is probably more Mourinho and his tactics versus previous tactics than it is players being put in position. I think that's part of it. Cucurella is an upgrade. Dumfries is an upgrade.
Yeah, but I mean, Cucurella is the most annoying defender to go up against.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. They're both
and Dumfries is a beast.
But if you had both of those players and a more attack-minded manager who wasn't really as defensively stout as a Mourinho is, I don't think you'd see the big upgrade. I don't think you'd see the massive upgrade. So for me, I think this goes down to, you went out and got Jose Mourinho, But the real question for me is, is Jose Mourinho, who is eventually kind of essentially on a downslope of his career, is this him getting his juice back? Is he back to the old Mourinho?
I mean, it doesn't look like from an attacking perspective, the Real Madrid are not inherently better, and you wouldn't expect that from Jose Mourinho. They lost their game to, was it Real Betis, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah. They lost, I believe, 1-0. As much as you have, you put a lot of the onus on Vinny and Mbappe to kind of figure everything out going forward. I'm not like wildly impressed, but we saw the issues last season. The issues last season weren't scoring goals. They were defensive. And this is where, even though Inter Milan made the mistakes that they made, they still made it much more of a game in the second half. And to hold on and not fall apart and not,
There was a lot of pressure being put on by Inter Milan in the second half. Inter Milan started the second half very strongly. Jose Mourinho said, I don't want to play well and lose versus Betis. I prefer winning bad. I prefer playing badly and winning.
This is a quote machine, bro. This is why we love you.
Not the most shocking take from Mourinho, but that's kind of been his stance for since he left Porto. That's kind of how he's played. And dude, at the end of the day, I think that's kind of exactly what Real Madrid needed. Real Madrid had, Ancelotti is very much like a player's coach, and he's, one of these guys like, you guys do whatever you want. Not to say he isn't a tactician. He definitely moves some stuff around. You see him make adjustments, but his vibe wasn't to do this or else. And I'm getting that from Jose Mourinho. I didn't get that from Arbeloa. I didn't get that from anyone else as much as I'm getting
from Mourinho. I'd be surprised if they can string along string together like a bunch of good results to make it. I still think Barcelona is the better team and will probably
the way they're constructed right now. Yeah, I agree. Dude, Gabriel Jesus even scored today.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, obviously they're playing against different competition, but ultimately this is a look. I like that they're trying to they've addressed the issues that they've had, but we'll see if like an Mbappe can have a similar kind of season under Mourinho. If he does, I mean, that would be wildly impressive. Given we know that Mourinho is not you don't bring in Mourinho to win games by 4 or 5 goals. You know what I mean? So we'll see. The last thing I just want to mention real quick, and I want to show a photo of it is today Galatasaray against Sporting Club Portugal. This was a refereeing controversy with you know, somebody getting hit in the balls. Whenever we look at a still image, it obviously looks like it's the most violent thing in the world.
Yeah, this looks like this.
But when you get
it looks like this guy was attacked while he was walking home.
When you get studs to the gonads, yeah, it's never fun.
Studs to your spuds.
So, who was it that got the yellow? It was Altimira, Sergi Altimira, that got the yellow. And some people think it should have been a red. So
I think if you see if we were able to show you the full clip, you would see that Altimira is not looking at the player; he's looking at the ball.
Right. What so ball? What ball exactly?
Yeah.
Ball?
Well, there are multiple.
There's a lot going on here.
But yeah, he's looking up at the ball in play, and unfortunately, he kicks a different one. But I think because of that, this isn't a red card. And yeah, I can understand if you're a Galatasaray fan who already hates us both, even though I had nothing to do with it was you in that clip. But they absolutely despise us for the derby. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Which we'll call it. I think if you're a Galatasaray fan, you're probably upset about this because this feels like a good opportunity for you to be able to level or at least get close to leveling the game.
Yeah.
And I think this is just a hair in the yellow and not in the red for me.
It's just a pubic hair.
Yeah. It's a curly, thick hair, but it is just a hair.
It's it's unfortunate. I feel, you know, there's not much consoling you can do to the guy that got kicked in the
gym. Hit me with as much of that freezing spray as you got, though, Chief.
But I mean, I think it's the right call. I think a red is very, very harsh here. But you know, I don't know how much of a difference. Galatasaray fans are like, it should have been a red. And then they would have a better chance in the game. You would think, Sporting is a much tougher opponent or superior opponent to Galatasaray. And Galatasaray fans want any advantage they could get. So I understand that.
Shout out to all the Galatasaray fans out there. Right, the list of Ballon d'Or nominees has been released. There's some surprises on there. There's even an MLS player on there, which is kind of crazy. But Harry Kane is an interesting one because the question has to be asked, whether is this his last chance to win? And does he deserve to win the Ballon d'Or? I think it's huge that he's getting a nominee. And I think if there's ever been a chance for him to win, it's probably this. But I still think, even though he's a generational talent that deserves to win some major accolade, I don't think this is it.
Really? Okay. I mean, he's done pretty well in Bundesliga, winning lots of trophies, yes, scoring a whole bunch.
Because he's playing for Bayern, that's like saying, well, you know, look at PSG. They do really well in Ligue 1. Yeah.
He had a pretty good World Cup. Getting to the semifinal.
They didn't win.
They did not win. But he was...
That puts you over the top.
Pivotal in helping them get there, without a doubt.
Can I tell you something? He wins the World Cup. It's a different conversation I'm having.
Sure, sure. Even with, like, Spain winning the World Cup, and then, you know, Rodri's obviously got Golden Ball, so he's, he's going to have a very big shout. But
I think he has a very strong shout.
But it's one of those... similar to when Rodri won, like, he didn't do that with like goals and assists. He did it in another way. So you need to look at it from like a different perspective to understand why he's so important to his team, to his club, to his international team. But we're looking at the two right now.
433 is saying he has a 63% chance According to Polymarket, which is a clean record.
They're not currently under investigation by anybody.
No, everything's perfectly fine there. 63% chance, which is more than I thought, to be honest with you.
This is a big lead. If you're a politician, you see numbers like this, you're like, all right, where's
doing pretty good.
Where's my office in D.C. going to be?
Yeah. You start figuring out what desk you want.
I'm
shocked Rodri's not higher on this list. Winning the Golden Ball, yes, he didn't have as strong a club year.
Yeah.
Right? Due to injury and whatnot, and obviously City not winning the amount they normally win. Mm-hmm. But still, being the best player in the World Cup has to put you higher than 11% on this list, I think.
I agree. I mean, it all goes back to like MVP voting. Like, was this the most that's the way I look at Ballon d'Or, like the most valuable to your team to some degree. It's like, to me, it's like most valuable to your team plus a little bit more. Something else. Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, very funny because it is a French magazine. Right. And we give, or newspaper, what is it? French publication. And we give it a lot of credence, right? This seems to drive a lot of conversation in the sport over the one award that this French magazine is going to give. French publication. But it seems to me like if Rodri won it the year that, I guess he won the Euros and the treble, so there was really no question there.
Right.
Because how is Erling Haaland not higher on this list? And I know he didn't win in Europe, and I know he was also on Manchester City that didn't win a ton, but still, he looked incredible at the World Cup, in his first ever World Cup, in Norway's first World Cup in a very long time. Like, that to me is a sign of how dominant he was, is a sign that he kind of deserves to be somewhere on this list, not at the top, but somewhere on this list. I would have thought Rodri, Harry Kane, and Lamine Yamal were your top three. The fact that Rodri's not in there is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Especially since Lamine Yamal wasn't that impressive in the World Cup.
I'm not going to put too much on Polymarket to determine what those top three are. I don't know where they're getting those exact numbers, but we all, like, as far as the eye test and the vibes, I mean, we saw Erling Haaland at the World Cup and really making a case for himself as one of the best players in the world and in the last 12 months. Yes, to me, the year he lost to Messi. When Messi in 2022, when Messi won the World Cup, but that Erling Haaland season in any non-Messi winning the World Cup year, that's Erling Haaland's Ballon d'Or.
He has to be.
When they win that was the year he got the goal scoring record.
Yeah. Also, I think he scored 50 plus goals in all competitions.
He had a joke of a season.
But Messi, the romanticization of the Messi
story.
Right.
And that's
peak that moment. You can't take that away from him.
And that's just, it highlights the sort of example of what Ballon d'Or is and what it's been effectively the last like 15, 20 years of like the awards that like the Messi and Ronaldo kind of ruined the Ballon d'Or because they were having such
it was an arms race.
It was
which one of them will win more
it
of
it was
this
the
award.
Red Scare, yeah. Bro. Like it was the seasons that Messi and Ronaldo were having to win those Ballon d'Ors. Like most players that have won after that have not even come close to the kind of just straight up numbers or vibes or whatever you want to, like, you know, the Ballon d'Or, they would like your personality matters as well. Yeah. Like all this other stuff.
How well you politic for the award or for the nomination.
Oh, sure. Important.
By the way, 17th nomination for Lionel Messi has been nominated for this year's award. 17th time in his career that he's been in the running to win the trophy, which is huge. Actually 20 years apart from this nomination to his first one.
Incredible.
Isn't that crazy? Look, he's the first player ever to span 20 years between Ballon d'Or nominations, 2006 to 2026.
Has he?
That's crazy.
In those 20 years, I mean, I guess there must have been a season that he was not in the nomination, like not a nominee, or has been nominated as like the top, what is it, top 20? Or I mean, what are the final nominees? How many players is it total?
I don't know.
I think it's like 30 or something like that.
Yeah, 30.
Has he always been in the top 30? Has he been nominated every single year in the last 20 years? I actually do not know. But
I don't know either.
I'm assuming no, because I feel like that would have been brought up a lot too.
I mean, he's clearly been on there for a reason since 06, which is crazy to think about.
Sure. Yeah. This is a, I don't know if you, did you see the interview? He just did an interview recently with like two, I think either Spanish or Argentinian guys. And he was talking about himself a little bit more. He was he sounds much more like a normal dude. Oh, not even necessarily normal, but he was highlighting how much he loves his alone time, and how he says that the chaos in his house with the kids is like too much for him, and he just like wants to be alone.
Yeah,
and it's a little bit like, you know, sensory overload. Like he just like
well, that's a lot of people say that about him.
I'm just saying, but it's also like his kids. He's like, I can't even be around you.
Yeah. That's why I don't have kids. I'm like, I like my apartment is peaceful as hell. Ain't nobody barking. Exactly. Ain't nobody screaming. But there's no spit up anywhere. But I imagine no toys anywhere.
When he's on the pitch, it's probably the quietest he ever sort of.
White noise. Regardless of what you're yelling, it's just peace to him. I'm impressed that the run he's had. It also just made me realize that I got the math completely wrong on Diego Simeone, by the way. I said 24, it was 14. 2011 is when he started.
But oh, okay.
We can fix that.
Yeah.
Cut this part out, by the way. to look at the Messi sort of era that we're in, the arms race made this award feel not as much a who's better. It's did my guy win or not? You know, because the Messi-Ronaldo beef back and forth, the fans just make it unbearable. You know, look under the tweet of him 17th and the 20, it'll be people like, it's been rigged. And it's like Ronaldo is their avatar. You know what I mean? Like that made it worse. Now, when you look at it more holistically of like, who is the best player throughout the entire season? And that means club form and country form. I still don't feel like you can give that to Harry Kane. I'm fine if Harry Kane wins it because I feel like he deserves a major accolade. And it's like such a generational talent. It's like you can't be mad that he wins. But the same way like Nedved winning and Thierry Henry losing made me feel like, Thierry Henry got slighted that year.
Sure.
There's going to be somebody that got slighted this year. And it's probably either Erling Haaland or Rodri in my eyes.
Yeah, I can't think. I mean, who would even be like the next Messi? I mean, not Messi.
This is a nod. No, Messi getting is a nod. It stops at the nomination. So, no offense, but you are an MLS player, right? Like that's probably not going to be easy to convince someone that the statue getting an MLS is comparable.
So yeah, I mean, it's always the individual accolades versus your club or country's.
Your team also has to do well. Your club accolades, has to do well. Right, your country has to do well.
So Harry Kane, to me, collectively, I mean, and I would say the World Cup has more value than probably two or three other trophies combined. But I can see Harry Kane winning it. But then I can also slightly see if it's like 55-45 Rodri. Yeah. I'm like, look, I don't love it, but it's like it is what it is.
Did that even get to the final of the World Cup, though? Like, at some point, that has to weigh against you. And it's not like, and granted, it's not his first time in the World Cup. Like, Erling Haaland, his first World Cup, you think like, oh, there's a learning curve. It's a World Cup. It's a big state. He treated it like it was nothing. He's like, I'm actually just hanging out in America. And I play soccer. Right? It's crazy.
Realizing like the World Cup has, it might be a little bit overvalued when it comes to this.
That's one of the craziest things I've ever heard.
It's not. It went
1,000 episodes and finally you say this.
It might be overvalued in the sense of, you know, for this award. Not. I love the World Cup and I want to watch it all the time. I'm just saying. But for, you know, trying to decide, like the main problem is that the World Cup is a competition that is kind of erratic. It's kind of chaotic. And it doesn't always necessarily mean that the best players or even the best team wins the whole thing. It's just there's a little bit of luck. And there's just so much. It's so chaotic. Sometimes, I mean, look at the Argentina-Egypt game. Did Argentina deserve to win that game? Probably not. I mean, like the referee overturning that call, I probably had some sort of level of impact, even though Egypt still had a lead after that game. So it's like the chaos around it is it's like for the value of a Ballon d'Or, I think sometimes it's just like the entertainment aspect of like, you know, the Emi Martinez stops that ball from Kolo Muani,
yeah.
And then Messi and penalties, and they
one of the greatest saves sports history.
But that emotion, or even though like maybe it's one of the greatest saves, but why was Kolo Muani even in the position to take that shot? Poor defending, poor marking, like the chaos around the fact that you don't play with these guys regularly creates a level of havoc that isn't necessarily attributed to like beautiful football, but it is entertaining.
That's part of the sport though, right? Like that's part of the joy of the sport, is that you have these players that don't play together all the time, but they're playing for their nation, and it replaces armies to some of these nations, you know, going out and winning yes. these trophies. I think that's part of, you take that into consideration. That Kolo Muani save was so big that it's like, I mean, immediately I was like, that is the best goal, the best goalkeeper in the sport, regardless of what award gets presented.
Best goalkeeper, but I'm saying if Emi Martinez does not make that save, who wins goalkeeper of the year? Probably Hugo Lloris.
Yeah.
Most likely, right? That's what I'm saying. It's just the swing of the emotion.
That's
around
the good part, though. I think that's the beauty of it.
The swing of the emotion for voting of like who the best player in the world that is like, is it the most like refined and accurate way to determine who is the best player in the world? Not all. The World Cup doesn't necessarily do that.
But
the World Cup is
the icing on the cake.
It is.
The club form is the cake. And then the icing and the cherry on top is what happens on international competition, whether it's World Cup, Euros, Copa America, whatever it is, right? So to me, I think it's appropriate. If I had a vote, I don't know that I could give it to Harry Kane, because you didn't even, to not even get to the final.
Yeah. So you
had a chance.
You like icing more than you like cake. That's what you're telling me.
No one's going to suggest otherwise. I think both are very important. I think the ratio is the most important. But to me, you had a great club form, but it's at Bayern Munich. And if it's not like you went to you know, you didn't go to, I don't know, Borussia Mönchengladbach. You know what I mean? And suddenly you're winning everything.
Right.
You went to a place that was kind of already winning other than that one year. They've won, 13 out of the last 12?
Yeah.
I'm not convinced. You are a generational talent in Harry Kane. You deserve a major accolade in your career. And if it's this, I won't be upset. But I don't personally, and I'm a Harry Kane apologist for someone who's an Arsenal fan, by the way. But I am a Harry Kane apologist, but you would not be getting my vote. It would probably go to Rodri.
Okay.
That doesn't help me with the argument that I put over the World Cup. But yeah, that's exactly what I'm
saying. That's the thing. It's like I think it would be exciting to see a Bundesliga player win it. I'm not a Ballon d'Or stan and going crazy over this. Like it is not. I think over time these awards get a little less fascinating.
Until it's not, right? Like the FA Cup at one point people were like, eh, and now it's like really important again,
right?
I think it waxes and wanes, and maybe in your eyes, because the pillars of the competition are out, until it becomes one versus another.
Because it felt like when Messi and Ronaldo were winning it over and over, it was like, okay, well then this is the standard for a Ballon d'Or season. And now,
wouldn't that be love?
What a treat for us to get that. But
who would you give your vote to if you could?
I would give it to Harry Kane. I think it's a fantastic club season, and watching him play for Bayern, he's clearly, yes, it is Bayern Munich.
It's tough for me to say.
He's made the team
his
own.
Yeah,
he's made the team his own. My guy will dribble the ball. He'll take the ball from the keeper and dribble through, and he's an assist machine. He does it all. Like how much better as an individual athlete? How much more can he?
Maybe I shouldn't punish him for Bayern's previous success to him getting there, because he is impressive.
Well, they did, and they didn't win the first year he was there, so it was like,
which I thought like, oh my god, he's cursed, you know. But he's back. I don't know. I guess let us know who you would vote for, because I'm still, there's still something there. Yeah. I feel like you got to do something big on one side. Something spectacular.
The other, on the women's side, the women's Ballon d'Or list also came out, their nominees. Kind of traditional names that we're used to seeing, a lot of Barcelona players, the Putellas of the world, Mapi León. There is, but Rose Lavelle is on here, who I think, I guess, could have an opportunity.
Which, by the way, that's incredible that Rose Lavelle got nominated, because they don't really love us out here, bro.
Not really. And then they also, I think, you know, as far as NWSL players, it just generally feels like the Ballon d'Or folks.
It's pronounced Bon Mati's name, by the way. I think I did just before.
But Bon Mati, right. That's his name, right? Anyway. But the Xhowinga also being there from NWSL. But Rose Lavelle, I think the, I guess I could have a real opportunity. Obviously won at the NWSL championship last season. And my biggest frustration, and I think it, I saw Sophia Smith talking about this as well, about how she, you know, she plays for the Portland Thorns, and
she's not interested in playing in Europe.
Yeah, has she ever had interest of going over there? And you know, wouldn't you want to win a Ballon d'Or? And wouldn't you think you would have a better chance? And she's like, nah, I just want to be with my family. I don't really care about winning Ballon d'Or. And that's kind of my approach. I'm like, yeah, you're doing your thing. You're playing in World Cups. You're in Olympics. It's a strange thing for, because NWSL to me is the most competitive league. I occasionally will watch WSL. I will occasionally watch La Liga Femenina, and it's just if it's not Barcelona putting up 40 against another team in La Liga, it's like, it feels like the voters are not really paying attention to NWSL, when it seems like such a tremendous oversight, because it feels the most competitive. But
it's the lack of Champions League, I think, is what causes that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Even though players who have played in both Europe and in NWSL will say NWSL is Champions League every week.
That's
the level of competition you're facing versus in Europe, where you get a couple weeks off because some of the lower teams in your league might not have the star power or the player power that your team has, and it's very heavily stacked at the top. That said, it still feels, because like NWSL is like off on an island on its own, and that's why I feel like they need to do a little more to like intermix with some of the players in Liga MX, intermix with some of the clubs, intermix with some of like the Northern Super League, USLW, like find a way to show Europe, not just for Ballon d'Or, but for just like the way the game is spoken about. The fact that the club names that are often used in Europe have like these, you know, massive histories behind them, and in NWSL, you don't have that. You know, you don't have your Bayern Munich, you don't have your Wolfsburgs, you don't have your Arsenals, you don't have your Man Cities. They don't necessarily have a long history, but you get the point. Like, these are big names. These are very notable names. You don't get that with Gotham. You don't get that with Portland Thorns. You know what I mean? It's just like the history is a little bit shorter.
So it doesn't feel as objective as it probably should be, right? It feels like the Ballon d'Or is effectively used to not prop up, but really highlight what's happening in Europe. And like, hey, these are the players.
It is a European publication. I get that. I get why
football
it
would be that. Football is not in one continent.
No, it's not. But also, like, if, you know, until they find a way to make it feel not so siloed in America. And I think that's actually by design. We've spoken to people high up in NWSL, and not always, but some people have kind of answered questions like, well, we're fine over here. We're doing our own thing. And it's like, you need to be a part of the global community if you want to get some of these, this level of recognition. And I think NWSL players deserve to be more highly considered for Ballon d'Or, because performing here is harder than performing in WSL. That's just it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no bones about it.
If you mad, let us know in the comments. But this is why we need to start a Cooligan Dior, okay?
Yeah. Oh.
And really, you know, bridge this gap, really fill the void that exists of all this kind of players in the Western Hemisphere kind of being ignored by.
Yeah, dude, and we'll ignore the Europeans, bro.
We never heard of Europe.
I don't know none about that.
Not really familiar.
We're in a war. Maybe we'll pay attention.
not a lot going on that we're interested in over there. So, but yeah, look, the ceremony, I think, is on October 26th or something like that. So we'll see who
we'll
ends
be
up.
There. Okay. We've never been invited.
Please, someone invite us. We'll go. If you can invite iShow Speed, why can't we be there, bro?
Bro, you think I won't make him do a backflip off one of the scenes?
I will do a backflip in front of Aitana Bonmati.
Bonmati gets a backflip, and I will attempt one, and then I need your health insurance.
It would be the first time I do attempt and do a backflip, but that's why it makes it entertaining.
Yeah, all right? We'll all get to find out. What do I look like in a tux? Let's find out.
Let's get to Rapido Reactions. We have 90 seconds to cover all the topics that we did not get to today. First up, Antoine Griezmann is not built for Florida. He can't handle it. He can't do it. This pic of him went viral. Damn. Of him looking like a nona.
Nona, bro. He's got, is that a babushka on his head? He's looking stressed.
Bro, it is.
This is like post-marathon face.
Exactly. He should have that metal, aluminum foil on him. This is
when I used to live on the Upper West Side, I'd see that. I'm like, was today the marathon? Because I wake up so late.
Major League Soccer is a little tougher than people thought, ain't it? But this is, we were talking about him looking like a grandma. The first thing I thought when I saw this was the Grannies episode from Bluey. Do you remember this, Alexis? I know you're a big Bluey fan.
How uncomfortable would you be if I did remember this? Because okay. I got no kids, bro. I got no reason to watch this.
As the dad of a
is one of these three characters Bluey, yes, or are all three of them Bluey?
The blue one is Bluey.
There's two blue ones up there.
There is only one.
There's one really blue one, but the first one's kind of blue.
The first one is gray, but you have it. It's time for glasses, or you're colorblind.
My wife thinks I'm colorblind, so maybe she's right.
That is
middle joint orange, though.
That is yes, bingo. So Bluey, okay. Bingo, and Muffin. But this was a very popular episode in Bluey, to the degree that whenever my son he'll put on like a blanket over his head, or if somebody else has a blanket on his head, he'll say like Granny or from Bluey, yeah, or whatever. And it's just like, all right, the first thing I thought when I saw.
There's Aaron West. I know we don't have time, but yo, Aaron West. That's Aaron West. Says, I'm crying. Bro looked like he just got back from Vietnam. He looks stressed. Thank God MLS is switching to a more fall schedule, not for anything, but just for Griezmann to survive.
It might be a
the man loves America, but he never looked up the weather. Let's talk a little bit about Lionel Messi, because he made the news for the business side. He actually just bought 100% stake in CD Eldense, which is a club in the second division of Spain. 100% owner of this club. And by the way, if you're one of the 55,000 people who lives in Elda, Spain, yo, your Airbnb rates just went up like 10x. This is going to be a nice win for you.
100% stake in the club. This man has to show up to some board meetings and really has to be there.
How excited would you be for the Zoom to open and it says Lionel Messi? It's the only time I'd actually want to be on a Zoom call.
Look, this is from The Athletic. Says Lionel Messi has reached an agreement in principle to buy Spanish second tier side Eldense. The deal would pit Messi against Cristiano Ronaldo, who bought a stake in Saudi owned side Almeria, who play in the same league in February. So this rivalry will never end. To the day we die, they're going to be playing against each other in some way or another.
Imagine they're in like the owner's box together watching the game happen, bro. Mm. This could be huge. I think Uday Almeria is a bigger club at the moment, but they're both known for their academy. So yeah, there's a nice play.
Didn't
here.
Didn't Almeria beat like Real Madrid last season or something in Copa del Rey or something? They did
something big.
Didn't they something?
This is the club. Sede Eldense is in the Alicante region on the southern coast. It's not a bad place.
Isn't
to go
near
visit.
Like Valencia or something like that?
That's the Gulf Coast. Yeah, yeah.
So no,
Hercules, which very famously also in Alicante, beat Barcelona 1 year, and they had a parade. just for beating them.
All right.
So maybe this is his chance to get his lick back, bro. He's like, yo, this is my get back.
Wow. He hasn't forgiven.
No, Hercules for winning that game.
Major League Soccer is spending millions in the transfer market for the first time, and they are breaking records, their own records. They have spent about $370 million bringing players in to the league. This is kind of wild. When you look at just a couple years ago, they were, I think in 2021, they spent like 180 yeah. million or something like that. So there's a real interest, a little, maybe the sporting directors that they're hiring are convincing, is convincing ownership to take a few more risks and stuff like that. Not only are they spending this kind of money, but they're also get money coming in. Like I think it was like 280 million or something like that, that they brought in from revenue from selling in place. So they're building up talent that they can sell on, and they're spending money to bring the players.
Yeah, I think the wages are up, where players are making comparable money to what they would make in smaller clubs in Europe, or not the top biggest clubs in Europe. I think it's starting to level out. They need to get a little bit bigger in the transfer market, it feels like, because you're an entire league. And as an entire league, yes, you've broken a record in how much you spent, but it's still not even comparable to like what Manchester City spends.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not that you should spend the amount, but you're a whole league versus what one of the big clubs in the world. So like when I see that numbers, I'll know, oh my God, MLS is a real player in this game. And I can't believe we've gotten in the 1,000 episodes we've done, we've gotten to the point where we're saying, is MLS spending too much money on players? Like, why are we
They are not.
Why are we paying the same as
these owners? They're good for it.
Yeah, they got it. Let's talk about Champions League, because there's a club called Viking FK, and they have two managers at the same time.
What?
Oh yeah.
What's this about?
It's a two-man. just when you thought that was the definition of that. And here's the crazy part. They've been managing, co-managing together since 2021. So that's 5 years. Well, my parents couldn't even stay together for 3 years, more of an issue with my parents. But this is crazy. They both share equal responsibilities. They are both responsible for all the decision-making of the first team.
This is so foreign to me. And it's like when, like, I remember being younger and hearing somebody, I remember that there's a comic, Lucas Connolly, I remember meeting him, and he was like, I have two moms. And I was just like, initially you're just like, what? If you didn't grow up with it, you're just like a little bit thrown off.
Was it like a tag team thing? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's hard to sort of, two managers, like, who do you talk to if you're a player? Yeah. Do you have to wait until they're both in the room? They're not related or anything.
It's like the difference between having a dictator and a parliament. You know what I mean? You're like, you don't know. You obviously understand there's like different approaches, but I've just never heard of something like
that. I've also never heard of it going well. I'm sure it's happened before,
right?
But they're in the Champions League.
Imagine getting there alone. Obviously, things are going pretty well. Like, why fix something if it isn't broken? But if it does not go well, everybody's gonna be like, it's this unorthodox relationship.
Maybe that's because there's two of you. You know,
Trinity Rodman is at the U.S. Open supporting Trinity Rodman's boyfriend. You love to see it. Ben Shelton beats Carlos Alcaraz, and she went to the U.S. Open. The match ended at like nearly 3 a.m.
She's in training.
She had to get to training. She had to go back from New York to D.C. and she had to be there at 9:30 a.m. and she was on time.
Yeah, I mean, let's not act like she's driving herself. I'm sure she has a driver. She's sleeping very comfortably in the back. But yeah, I mean, this is what you do when your boyfriend or your significant other is a high level athlete. You got to go support him.
Hot.
Yeah, he's also hot, by the way. He is very hot. But if she was in the final and he had a match, he'd probably be there too.
You love, they're very, they post a lot and everything on TikTok, and it's great to see. It's funny because I've seen women take videos of Ben Shelton like with his shirt off, like in matches. And the comments are simply like, I can't wait till Trudy Robin gets here in the comment section. And then you scroll down a little bit more. Oh, and Trudy Robin's there. She's like, oh, he's hot, isn't he? Right?
I ain't sleeping either. I ain't sleeping there either, bro. I'll make it.
They have
This is impressive. I just love the fact that they seem to really like have a fun back and forth. Like, she knows she's the camera's going to be on her.
Yeah.
She's doing fun things. She's having a fun with it. She's not trying to be too stoic.
The problem,
I love it. It's a fun relationship.
The problem here is that we all get too emotionally invested, and now we're like, all right, get married, make babies, do any, like,
I'm not thinking any of that. I'm thinking, I want to try a honey douche.
You don't want them to break up. That's the problem whenever we get parasocial.
Yeah.
So I just hope for the best for both of them. So
I got a crazy rule about Champions League. I just found this out. I didn't know this, but it's been going on for a long time. Did you know that UEFA doesn't allow Champions League clubs to have a character mascot? Like, think of like a Gunnosaurus.
Yeah.
Gunnosaurus is not allowed to be on the pitch pregame. Do you know why?
Why is that?
Because he's larger. This is a quote.
Mm.
Larger, or just more than slightly larger than a normal human being. That is a quote. If your character is more than slightly larger than a normal human being, I don't know how you quantify any of these things.
What's normal now?
You're not allowed on the pitch pregame. So Gunnosaurus is a good example because he's 7 foot tall. He's got to be out in the concession area, maybe like, you know, in front of the stadium. Nah. Welcome to camp. But you can't be on the pitch because you're slightly more than slightly larger
than an
average human being. Who? What human being? Shaq? Wemby? Who are we talking about?
Well, who are they threatened? Well, who are the mascots? Who could they possibly threaten?
Who was upset at UEFA and was like, this is too big? And you know what I mean? I don't get it.
It's just a very odd rule, because then could you make a more miniature version of Gunnosaurus to have on the pitch?
A Gunnosaurus Jr.
A Gunnosaurus Jr. Who is about the average size of a human. Is that would clubs go that route to get their mascot on the pitch?
I would. To have a Champions League mascot on the pitch, I would have a Gunnosaurus Jr. for sure.
Okay. And then you can have a whole family.
Oh,
you know?
My God. Mamasaurus.
Mamasaurus.
Oh, my God.
Why? Yeah. It's UEFA. You made me do this.
Yeah, this is your fault. Now we got 18 mascots. The whole family. We got a whole series.
All right. That's what happy the reactions. Let's also wrap up the show right there. Thank you so much, everybody, for hanging out with us. Another on the 1,000th episode of the Cooligans. I mean, it's a tremendous. Thank you so much for all the years of support for helping us get to 1,000, because we wouldn't be able to do it without you. So shout out to everybody there.
And if you want to celebrate with us, watch our altcast. Please don't forget.
On September 16th, join us. We're going to be watching the Campeones Cup, and we're going to be showing the game. We're going to have access to replays, to the ref cam. It's going to be a very Cooligans experience.
It's not a watch along. It's an altcast, baby. This is official. Apple's never done this before. Odds are they may never do it again after they see what we're up to.
It is the Manning cast without the Manning.
Yeah,
okay?
Come on. Cruz Azul. But yo, also, Tom Brady also never beat us in a Super Bowl. So it is what it is. I just got the same phone call.
Why is Joy Dardano calling me?
He must be nearby. He just called me. But
he's probably going to the NYCFC game.
Oh, okay.
That's probably what it is. All right.
All right. All cast, you got to check it out. And the only place to watch it, yahoosports.com and Yahoo Sports app. The only place you can watch it. So it's Cruz Azul, Inter Miami, Lionel Messi.
Join us there. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Campeones Cup final.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hit like on whatever podcast app you're listening to. Go to the YouTube, like, subscribe, do all the things you're supposed to do to support the Cooligans in their 1,000th episode. It's the best way to celebrate by hitting like and subscribe. So we'll see you on Monday with a brand new episode. So thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you Monday, everybody. Adios. Peace. I hope all your teams lose.
Love you guys.